Welcome into Monday's edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. I'm Dan Thomas, Ali Moreno, Hercules Gomez, Stevie Nicol, Don Hutchinson, Julian Laurent and Gab Marcotti all joining me later on in the show. We'll start with Sonamon Kalou, who's got himself into all sorts of trouble, made the brilliant decision to live stream himself in the Hertha Berlin locker room. And not only that, it showed him fist pumping, his teammates crashing a test, breaking a lot of the protocol that the Bundesliga have introduced. Since he has been suspended, this is what the Hertha Berlin GM, Michael Preetz, had to say. Sonamon Kalou with his video has caused Hertha a great deal of damage. But above all, in the current discussion within society about the return of Bundesliga matches and the role of professional footballers, given the impression that individual players don't take the coronavirus subject seriously. Well, let's welcome Julian Laurent and Gab Marcotti to the show. Gab and Jules, obviously every week you do your Corona Idiot of the Week. You recorded your podcast too early to have Sonamon Kalou as your king.
Yeah, that's right. We won't be sending him the coveted COVIDiot award this week, although I think we might want to maybe we'll discuss renaming it the Sonamon Kalou Award. There's so many things that make this worse. One is obviously he wasn't filmed doing it. He filmed himself doing it, which makes you realize that he really has no understanding of what's at stake here. The fact that on Wednesday, Angela Merkel, the German chancellor and her government, they're expected to green light or not green light, as the case may be, the return of football in Germany, and people have worked extremely hard to try to make this happen behind closed doors. The fact that he's entirely nonchalant, even as people around him go and tell him, look, you know, erase that, turn it off. The man is 35 years old, and based on today's evidence, he seems to have the mentality of a 12-year-old, and not a very well-behaved 12-year-old either.
It's a concern, Jules, isn't it? Because as excited and as positive we are about the return of football, obviously particularly in Germany, we have seen incidents. We saw it in England with Kyle Walker. We saw it as well with Jack Grealish, that inevitably there are going to be some outliers in this.
Yes, you're right. Although Kalou is taking it to another level, let's be honest. You know, if there's thing that you could do in your own home, and you could break the rules and the social distancing, that kind of stuff. But doing it like this, in your dressing room, at your club, in front of everybody, including your medical staff who were taking some tests, when you went over and crushed one of your teammates having his test done, it's just completely stupid. And I mean, Sonamon Kalou has been a waste of time for Hertha Berlin. He's been a waste of money as well. He's played 5 games this season. He's 35, like Gab said. And surely this is one of the most disgraceful things that we've seen so far in this crisis.
Okay, let's turn the page, because I was going to start the show with a real positive vibe, because we've heard when I've gone to Gab in the past, oh, you've got to see what happens, see this and that. But Gab, on your podcast today, I thought you sounded more optimistic than you ever had, especially when you look at the figures that we saw, of course, Germany releasing today, what, 10 positives out of 1,700 tests.
Yeah, and this is, of course, 10 positives out of 1,724 tests. It's about 40, 49 or 50 per club. These include both players and obviously backroom staff. You know, the people who need to stay healthy need to stay virus-free. And this is, of course, before, you know, the really more hardcore, more stringent quarantine conditions stepped in. And we know that three of those are obviously the three at Cologne. This concerns the first division and second division clubs. There was a lot of optimism in saying that, you know, these guys are already generally healthy, and there's only a few things that we need to do to go and monitor the situation and have them play safely. This was hugely encouraging. But of course, that was before the Kalou video came out. Let's just hope it doesn't jeopardize everything and perhaps unduly influence the government's decision.
Of course, Jules, you've got people who are saying, yeah, but okay, what happens if they're positive tests? Surely then everything has got to shut down. This has kind of proved the contrary to that.
Yes, and also the way they've handled the cases in Cologne, where those three, the two players and the backroom staff member, who then went into self-isolation, but not the rest of the squad, or not the rest of the little groups in which those two players were training with. And clearly testing the other members of the club and nobody else was positive. So they've clearly, but listen, they have this. I mean, yeah, okay, sometimes you might have someone who's positive, maybe not showing any symptoms, maybe showing some, and you could always find a way. But they've got this under control. They've had it before anybody else for the rest of the population. They have it for their football players. They have protocols in place. They're disciplined. They're organized. They're everything that they're not in the Premier League, for example. So, of course, you would expect them to be the first one to resume football, and it will be kind of normal, and it will be expected and fair. But even then, you're not completely 100% sure. And like Gab said, you know, we think they will give the green lights and Angela Merkel on Wednesday, but there's also a possibility that she waits another week, maybe, or maybe another 2 weeks. But if they're not ready, then nobody else in Europe is ready.
It's going to happen though, Gab, isn't it? We're going to see Bundesliga action this month.
I mean, I'm leaning to the fact that it's going to be more yes than no at this stage. Like I told you, I was all positive and cheery this morning when Jules and I did the podcast. And not just about Germany, but more cautiously about Spain and Italy too. I think it's leaning in that direction. That number, that 10 out of 1724, gives you a really tremendous baseline to start with. And that tells you, yes, if you take the right precautions, we can do it. It also tells you that, as Jules said, having the players, you know, not locked up, all up, locked up together, but quarantining at home and then coming out the train, that system can work to help contain the virus. You know, now it's up to whether they can meet the other requirements, and that's a decision that of Angela Merkel's pay grade and nobody else.
Meanwhile, you mentioned the Premier League, Jules. Things very much up in the air regarding the resumption of play there. Obviously, there's this vote on May the 8th from the clubs to decide how they're going to handle the return. Talk of neutral venues, of no relegation. You said last week that you were confident there could be action back in there could be action returning in June. Do you still feel as strongly as positive about that, considering all the conflicting reports about the clubs butting heads at the moment?
I don't think there will be Premier League in June. I think it will be in July. I think it will come back because that's clearly the desire from the government. And when the leadership leads in that way and pushes for it, I think it will happen. But they're just too disorganized right now. There's just nothing in place. There's no protocol. There's all those ideas and, you know, players taking their own cars to go to a secret neutral venue that they will only know on the morning of the game, and all those possibilities and all those things in the air, and there's just nothing concrete. And the players, well, I think a lot of players are not so keen on going back so early because it's all up in the air, and they don't have any reassurances about tests, about what happens if someone is positive, like we've seen in Cologne. If there's an issue somewhere, why if those tests don't turn up, or why if this, why if that, and they've got no answers right now. And until the Premier League give them an answer or answers to the questions that they have. And trust me, they have a lot of questions, which doesn't mean they don't want to play again. I think all of them want to play again. Everybody wants to see football again. But if you don't answer the questions that people have, especially the players who are your main assets, it won't happen. It won't happen. So unless the Premier League starts getting a groove on and starts getting organized, I fear we won't see football before July.
So Gab, considering we've just talked about the Bundesliga and how they seem to have dealt with it well, and this seems to be a plan that is established and should see the return of football sooner rather than later, why don't the Premier League just go, oh, look, they're doing it good over there. Why don't we just do what they're doing?
Well, it's not that simple. It's a different country. It's a country that's at a different stage in the coronavirus pandemic. It's a country that has a much better health system. It's a wealthier country. It's a better organized country. You know, there's 101 reasons why Germany is ahead. I think you can put some on the government. But I agree with Jules. I think in other levels, they've been behind. This business with the protocol, and, you know, the latest is that perhaps on Wednesday, they will finally get around to discussing a protocol for training sessions, a specific one, and actually approving it for training sessions, for games, you know, rather than all these leaks that we've had. I think that's a big factor. I think another big factor is that elsewhere, the debate has been much more public. You know, in Spain, you can't shut Javier Tebas up. You know, the guy talks every hour on the hour. In Italy as well, there's been a lot of public debate. In Germany, we've heard Christian Seifert talking not just to Germany's media, but to the world's media and answering all these questions. Here in England, the Premier League's had a slightly different role. They've generally, you know, tried to work quietly, tried to work behind the scenes and not really say very much. And as a result, all you've really had is these leaks, these fragmented leaks from clubs. Gary Neville raised the issue as well. And what that's done is it's undermined a lot of confidence in people, that they can actually get this done. And the other thing is, you know, it's great. Obviously, you have to wait for the government to give the green light, but it's much better if you have a plan, if you have scenarios in place so that when the government does give the green light, you can go to the government and say, hey, we want to do these things this way. Is that okay with you? Rather than sitting there and saying, well, there's no point, you know, preparing anything until the government gives us the go ahead. Because as Jewel says, you lose valuable time.
Meanwhile, in Italy, Vincenzo Spadafora not exactly making many friends at the moment. This is the front page of Corriere dello Sport. There he is, dressed as a Green Reaper, with a football very much burst as a result of him. This is what he talked about. Talking about the return of football in Italy. I've read strange things, but nothing has changed compared to what I've always said about football. Training groups will not resume before May the 18th. And now is not the time to start talking about restarting the league. Gab, out of everyone in Italy amongst the ministry, you imagine the sports minister would be the driving force to try and get things back. He seems to be completely at the opposite end.
Yeah, you would think so. But, you know, he says, well, I'm not the minister for football or for professional football. I'm the minister for all sports, from grassroots football to fencing to swimming to whatever. And I think the good news is that, you know, obviously he's got a say in this, but, you know, he's not the one driving the conversation. I think he was nonplussed a little bit because after the government relaxed certain restrictions on exercise, and different regions interpreted them in a very, very lax way. And that prompted different clubs, starting with Bologna and Sassuolo, to go back into training, which they did today. Now, obviously, it's socially distanced training and whatever else. And all the other clubs jumped in and said, hey, let's all follow suit. And other clubs like Juventus, you know, told its superstars around the world, hey, everybody, come back and come training. And I think he just wanted to make sure that, you know, what's all this momentum? Nothing's really changed. And in one sense, he's right, in the sense that, you know, I think May 18th is really the earliest date you can talk about having actual training in groups. But, you know, you do feel as if the general sense, the general momentum has shifted. The clubs at least believe that there is a possibility of starting again. And at some point, the government's going to have to make a decision in the next 2 weeks.
Of course, the decision made in France last week, cancelling football until September. Jules, I just wanted to get your opinion of what the non-president, Vladimir Keita, had to say. I'm not a politician, but stop trying to tell us how to run businesses. The right decision was not taken. It is very harsh for the clubs, and at least here, not a single player did not want to restart. All they were asking for was to do so. Is this an outlier, or is this the general opinion from most amongst French football, Jules?
It's a bit mixed, really. Some people now, with a bit of hindsight, and it's been almost a week since the decision was taken to stop the season, have realised that maybe that was taken a bit too early. Maybe they could have waited another couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks, and see especially what was happening in other countries, because now, if France is the only of the big five leagues not to resume, and everybody else does, it would be a disaster for French football and for the French clubs in that league, for sure, 100%. There's no doubt. So I think more people now are coming out saying, do you know what? Maybe actually in hindsight, we thought first it was the right decision because it was clearly deemed not safe enough and healthy enough to resume, but maybe we could have waited a bit more and have a bit more discussion around it. And clearly, Vladimir Keita, the Nantes owner and president there, highlighting the role that Roxana Maracineanu, which is the sports minister, played in France. And I don't think she handled it very well. And certainly since that decision was made last week, she'd been quite critical on the clubs that were not so keen on stopping the season, which I think was, again, wrong from her. So you will see more people like Vladimir Keita, and Jean-Michel Aulas is another one, and you might have some lawsuits towards the French Federation and the French government and things like that. You also have half of the league that thought it was the right decision and the wisest not to take any risk, and because it was not safe enough to resume the season to make the right decision.
A lot more from Gab and Jules today on the latest edition of the podcast. You can download it now over on the website. A lot of speculation about the future of Timo Werner. This is what he had to say. If a move were to become an issue at some point, I would be more tempted by a move abroad than a move to Bayern. Well, Stevie Nicol and Don Hutchinson with us to discuss this. Don, Didier Mann, of course, former Liverpool player, doesn't feel that Timo Werner would fit into Jurgen Klopp's side. What do you think?
Well, I would disagree with Didi on that one. I've been commentating on Timo Werner for quite a while now, and everything I see a top-class player. He can play as a nine. He can play off that left-hand side. He's super quick. He's got a great attitude, good work ethic. The trouble is, Liverpool fans might argue, where is he going to fit into the 11? Well, Jurgen Klopp doesn't really tend to rotate his best players, but he might need to whenever the Africa Cup of Nations is played. Sadio Mane is going to be away. Mo Salah's going to be away. And I just think it gives Liverpool more ammunition. It gives them more goals. And, you know, Timo Werner going into Liverpool, I can only see that as a positive.
Does he get in the starting 11, though, Stevie?
Oh, don't start with you. Does he get the starting 11? Listen, Timo Werner would be a fantastic signing for Liverpool. Yes, the three that they have right now are arguably the best front three in the world, but the best time to strike is when you're hot, and this is now the time. And Timo Werner, all the things he's saying, it looks like he's desperate to go and join Klopp and Liverpool, so he can play anywhere along that front line. You know, one of the things that Didi was saying is that he doesn't think he could play in the Firmino role. Well, if you think of what happens when Firmino doesn't play, he plays Salah there. If there's one thing Salah is not good at, it's knitting things together, but it still works. Liverpool still make it work. So there's no question. Timo Werner could play either wide, or he could play right up the pipe where Firmino plays. So I think this is a no-brainer. If Liverpool can sign this guy, absolutely get it done.
All the talk, though, is about how there won't be as much transfer money around during the summer. So then if I was to give you a choice between Koulibaly and Timo Werner, Don, who would you go for? Because Koulibaly, of course, has been linked to Liverpool as well of late.
Well, I mean, that's a hell of a decision. I mean, I think if Koulibaly comes through the door and he plays alongside Virgil van Dijk, I think you wrap the title up right there. I don't think there's anyone better. There won't be another partnership like it. The best defenders out there in Europe, apart from the Premier League at the moment, is Milan Skriniar at Inter. My gut feeling is he's going to join Pep at Man City. And alongside him is Koulibaly, I think, at 28. He's a great age. He's got good pace. He's strong. He's a leader. I think he walks straight into Liverpool's lineup and he makes them harder to beat. He makes them a physical presence. You wouldn't want to play against Van Dijk or Koulibaly. How on earth, as a striker, do you even think about getting any joy out of those two? So a really tough question to answer, but if you had to push me on it, I would probably lean towards being Koulibaly.
But you won the title by a million points. Is that really where you need to reinforce, Don?
Well, I think so. Stevie's probably better equipped than I am. I was more of an attacking midfield player and a goal getter, but I think if you're going to win titles and you want to try and adapt, Liverpool have to be harder to beat. You have to go into Europe and you have to have people like Koulibaly who can lead you into Europe. You can try and, you know, go that way when games are tight. If you wanted a clean sheet, Koulibaly and Van Dijk, Robertson and Trent would be nigh on impossible to break down, Alisson behind them. And it would just put fear, I would imagine, into every manager and every player that lines up against Liverpool thinking or trying to come up with a game plan, how you're actually going to score goals, what is Liverpool's weakness going to be. And with Koulibaly and Van Dijk and Alisson as that sort of triangle at three, they would take some beating.
Stevie, I know you weren't a goal-getter like Don, obviously, but maybe you could chip into this conversation anyway. Timo Werner or Koulibaly?
My goodness. Listen, if I had a wish list, then yes, I would wish to have Koulibaly alongside Van Dijk. But if you're saying I can only have one choice, I'm going to go with Timo Werner. You know, I think the front three need a lot more rotation than the back line. You know, the way Liverpool play, the way that front three presses when they play together, you know, eventually it's going to catch up with them. They've been unbelievable for the last 18 months, but you cannot keep that up for 6-7 years. You know, you need a break. I think defensively, Gomez has done enough to make Klopp be comfortable. He's not Koulibaly. But I'll tell you what, he's not that far off it. And so, if it's a choice between the two, I'm going to edge it towards Timo Werner.
Meanwhile, moving on to your boyhood club, one of the many you support, Don. Talking about Newcastle, everyone agrees pretty much that Mauricio Pochettino is the man they should get as the coach. What about Coutinho coming in as one of the big stars? Does this move make sense to you, Don?
100%. The most important man at the moment to try and get through the door is Pochettino. You have to, if you're the owners and the chairman and you've got all this money behind you and you're going to pump it into Newcastle, the first one you have to get right is the manager. Because if you get a world-class manager in Pochettino, I guarantee your players in the Premier League, players all around Europe will be looking at Newcastle thinking, that could be a club I want to join. Because they're only going to go one way and they're going to go right into that top six and hopefully top four. You know, it reminds me when Kevin Keegan took over in the early 90s and they had Newcastle's best ever chairman in Sir John Hall. And Newcastle came close in 95-96 and should have won the title. But they were full of, I wouldn't say Galacticos, but superstar players. And they got stronger and stronger. Then it all sort of fell apart. Newcastle need a massive rebuild. Coutinho is not going to win Newcastle the title on his own with the current crop of players. He's not even going to take them into the top 4 to 6. It's going to take Pochettino to come through the door, then Coutinho to then come in, and then all of a sudden everyone will take Newcastle seriously. Because at the moment, you know, it's not done. It's just a pipe dream. But if Pochettino and Coutinho were in at Newcastle, I am pretty sure the best players in the Premier League and Europe would want to join Newcastle.
If you were Pochettino, though, Stevie, would Coutinho be at the top of your list?
He would be on the list. Again, it depends on a lot of things, you know. Clearly, if Pochettino signs on at Newcastle, the only thing you know is there is a huge war chest, because otherwise Pochettino is going nowhere near there. And you have to start somewhere, and right now Coutinho would be a huge upgrade on anything going forward that Newcastle have. So yes, he's on the list. Is he first on your list? Maybe not. But I think to get the ball rolling, you know, I'm 100% with Don. The first move has to be Pochettino. And after that, if the money's available, then there's no question you will see big-name players going to Newcastle once again.
Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much. Just a reminder, ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. Be sure to join us.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
What's that? You want another interview from Hercules Gomez? Let's face it, who wouldn't? His latest victim, Noguchi Onyeu. This is what he had to say about that infamous fight with Zlatan.
He says that if they don't break it up, if the team doesn't break this up, one of you guys is going to die.
Did he say who?
Herc, did you get a lot more out of that fight?
Yeah, we got a lot more. Gooch is a character, and to go toe-to-toe with one of the world's biggest names, biggest personalities at that moment, I think Gooch is keeping a little close to the vest of what didn't happen, but he surely tells a lot of what did happen.
Ali, I do love all these Zlatan stories that have come out, and I know you and I know your character. I'd imagine there would be a point in which you would reach where you would step up and say, maybe that's enough. Is that fair?
And that's a position I've taken time and time again when talking about Zlatan and the fact that he said whatever he said to his teammates with the LA Galaxy, and that the teammates in the LA Galaxy, instead of taking upon themselves in facing Zlatan head on when he was in the locker room, now we just get this sort of kind of he said and she said, and we're just going to go back into dark corners and talk about Zlatan while he's not here. But there was an opportunity and there was a moment to address this, to take this head on, to take it up to Zlatan and say, all right, bro, all right, I'm here, okay? What you want to do about it? Let's talk about this, and if you don't want to talk about it, we can solve it in a different way if that's what's required. But the truth of the matter is that we're teammates, whether you like it or not. We're going to be here in this locker room, whether you like it or not, and we're going to need each other to win more games than not. And so I know we need you to score goals, but you're going to need me to do my job as well. This is a team game, and unless you acknowledge the fact that we are important to this group and acknowledge the fact that you have to respect your teammates, then we're going to have a problem. And I think that would have, in some ways, softened Zlatan's stance and gained more respect from the players that actually had approached him and said, hey, buddy, enough is enough. We can do this together or we're not going to do it at all. I just think that right now is way too late for the LA Galaxy players to kind of take a step back and continue to complain about what Zlatan was and wasn't, instead of having addressed it when he was right in the middle of the locker room and you could have taken care of the situation then.
Meanwhile, these quotes from Jozy Altidore talking about his future surprised me today. The US international saying, when I go back to Europe, I want to go to a place like the Netherlands. I was in contact with Feyenoord last summer when Jaap Stam was a trainer there, but it didn't become concrete. I'd love to play at a club like Feyenoord, AZ or PSV again. That would be great. I suppose, Ali, the reason that these surprise me is that I would just think, oh, you know, Jose will be fine in Toronto, take the money until he retires.
Yes, and I think that's still the case. I think this is a little bit of posturing. And the reason I say that, if you go back to a report that came out in January, a report that, by the way, was put out there by our very own, you know, very trusted source, Hercules Gomez, in terms of saying that the public criticism of Jozy Altidore regarding Michael Bradley's injury and the way that Toronto FC dealt with that injury would in some ways create a pathway in which Toronto FC would look for Jozy Altidore to go elsewhere. Well, I think this is a way of Jozy Altidore saying, you're looking for a way out for me? No, I'm looking for a way out myself. And you don't tell me what to do. I do what I do. It's posturing, I think, on both sides, because when you look at the numbers and what has been reported in terms of salary and guaranteed compensation for Jozy Altidore, there's nobody out there in MLS or in the world that is willing to pay that amount of money. We're talking about guaranteed compensation over $6 million a year. Who out there is lining up to do that? I don't think that's happening in the Eredivisie, and I don't think that's happening in Major League Soccer. And so it would be very difficult for Toronto FC to move Jozy Altidore anyways, and I do think that if Jozy Altidore wants to go elsewhere, then, well, he may have to take a pay cut. Does he want to do that? I don't know that that's the case either. So I think Jozy Altidore is trying to take control of the situation and send a message to Toronto FC saying, if you want to move me, I don't care. I want to move myself, actually.
What do you think?
I think Alejandro is onto something. I think when he says it's posturing by both sides, I think that may be the case. Toronto did want to move him, and Toronto was entertaining offers. And I will tell you this, I've received phone calls from Liga MX ownership groups, sporting directors, asking about Jozy Altidore, and it comes down to money, just like Alejandro says. Well north of $6 million guaranteed compensation for Jozy Altidore. That's a hefty bill for any club around the world right now. Now, there is a reason Jozy Altidore would have a market or would want to go back to Holland. That's where he had some of his most productive years in his career. He's a very good player for a big man. He's got very soft feet, but that relationship with Toronto, whether Toronto wants to admit or not, is deteriorating. He publicly criticized Sebastian Giovinco's exit. Alejandro Moreno already touched upon his MLS Cup injury for Michael Bradley and the way the club handled that injury moving forward. He criticized them there. I think if the right suitor comes along for both parties, this is something both parties would honestly consider. Now, his age, he's 30 years old. His compensation, I agree. If he wants to go elsewhere, it has to be the right situation. He would have to come down from that north of $6 million mark. But I do see something there where there's smoke, there's fire. And many have already led me believe that something could be in the works.
Make sure your daughter's all right, Herc, because I go to Ali and ask, forget money, could Jozy do something in the Dutch league?
I think he could. I think he could score a few goals here and there, and I think he could be a an important piece for a team, depending on what team that is. He has been successful there. Now, mind you, this was a while back, but I still think that there is something about Jozy Alderweireld that feels very comfortable in going back to Holland and continue to make a mark there. I don't think he's going to have the sort of productivity that he had at his most successful years there, but he may be productive for a group or maybe an important part for a team, but I don't think that team would be willing to pay the sort of money that he's now making at Toronto FC. And so if there's a deal to be struck, then there have to be a happy medium. And most of all, you have to say, and whether Jozy likes to hear this or not, he himself has struggled with injuries over the last couple of seasons. And that's something that whatever team is after him, whether it's in the Eredivisie or somewhere else, or with Hercules France in Liga MX, mind you, let's not forget, Hercules is getting phone calls from sporting directors and technical directors and coaches, and everybody is asking about every player in the world. This is how important Hercules is. But what I would suggest is Hercules or Jozy or whoever, if you're not healthy, you can't play. And so if you're going to make an investment, it's got to be a guy that's available to you out on the field.
Meanwhile, you spend your time speaking to bigwigs in Liga MX, Herc. I like to spend my evenings perusing Arturo Vidal's Instagram account, and I was quite taken aback by a sight of him with an Inter Miami background. What is going on?
It's very simple. Telemundo, a television company out here in the States, posted an Instagram story with him in an Inter Miami background asking if he's the next bomb signing, if he's the next big signing. And he goes and reposts it to his own stories. And this causes all sorts of rumor mills. Is he going to Inter? He quickly deletes it, which prompts people to think maybe there's something there. Listen, I think at the end of the day, who doesn't want to live in a city like Miami? Who isn't interested by Major League Soccer if you're a player abroad? The allure, the curiosity. I don't know if there's anything actually there. But if you ask Arturo Vidal and the major, or I mean, a majority of these players, if they'd want to live in Miami, I think the answer is yes.
Ali, forget on the pitch. I imagine Arturo Vidal would be a great reality TV show in Miami off it.
And that's a part that you have to take into consideration when making this decision. There's been a history of, let's just say, irregular behavior from Arturo Vidal over the course of his career. And
It's been regular.
And he's not gonna go and live in Fort Lauderdale. I'm gonna tell you that much. He's gonna be real close to Miami Beach, and there is plenty to do in Miami Beach for a guy like Arturo Vidal. I assume that there's an allure there for him and makes it appealing for him. But if I'm making this decision from a front office perspective, I also have to take that into consideration and say, look, what is he giving us on the field? And is he going to give us headaches off the field? And if those things don't seem to match up, then I would make the decision to stay away. The other reason I would stay away is because he's turning 33 in late May. And his game, at his most successful, has been about energy and intensity and his ability to cover ground and his ability to get into 50-50 challenges and win balls and be a physical presence and a guy that can get in your face and can sort of create momentum and energy for a team. That's not the player he is nowadays and would not be that sort of player for Inter Miami. If you're going to invest big money and you're Inter Miami, I would suggest either you go after a big-name striker or you divvy that money up and get you numbers, get you 3-4 good young South American players, Central American players that you can develop within Inter Miami and already give you a platform from which then you can build on to the future. I don't think Arturo Vidal is the answer for you on the field.
Herc, what was the conversation with David Beckham like when he called you to ask whether or not he should get Arturo Vidal?
When he came to the LA studios, we had an off-camera conversation that I can't share with you. I'm sorry.
Would you go for it, Herc? Would you get him despite the headache off the pitch?
I would. I honestly would. And I know Ali's got questions about what he has left in the tank, but he's a proven winner everywhere he's gone. And yes, he is about that energy. He's about that presence on the field. But there's a big difference in what is La Liga, Bundesliga, and Major League Soccer. I still think he has a lot left to offer. And I think he has that star power. And this is the player, this is the type of player that David Beckham and that ownership group, Jorge Mas, have promised us, that big signing. I agree with Alejandro. It has to be that forward because I think that's a position of need. But I think Arturo Vidal, he just makes a lot of sense here on and off the field. It's what Miami's about.
Arturo Vidal's not a big signing, is he, Herc? Compared to the other names?
I think he is within Major League Soccer. I really do. I mean, Juventus, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, you've got that star, you've got the lure, the glow of those teams. You know, I honestly think he could be a big player, but there are very select players that really have that star appeal around the league. No, he's not one of those, but there are only a handful of those, really. And I think Inter Miami, they still don't have that star player. And Arturo Vidal, he would be a major upgrade considering what they just went out and got, which was Rodolfo Pizarro.
Before I let you guys go, let's ask the easy question. Herc, when's MLS coming back?
That's a great question. What is it? They're going to start solo training in a few days, and this really boggles my mind, because solo training means you can not use the facility. So you can't go use the locker rooms, you can't go use the gym, you can't use the training room, you can't use the showers, you can't use anything within. You could only use the actual training field, and you could only do it by yourself. You can't even pass back and forth to a teammate. You can't shoot on a goalkeeper. Goalkeepers can't have, you know, their goalie coaches shooting on them. You can only dribble by yourself and run. So essentially, I don't know where we are with that. Now, going forward, maybe we see something like neutral sites. The MLS Players Union is going to have their own type of mini preseason that they're going to have the league sign off on. I think we're still a ways away. We need clear testing, accurate and fast testing before we can actually move forward to something. I don't think this is coming back anytime soon. It's a good step, but I could kind of not tell you when we're coming back.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. For more from Ali and Herc, be sure to check out their videos on YouTube, where they're joined by the one and only Sebastian Salazar.
No. Oh, no.
You know it and you love it.
One of the big stories coming out of the European notebook that was published on the website last week was the future of Mauro Icardi. So welcome back Julian Laurent and Gab Marcotti to the show. Gab, what's happening with him?
Well, look, he's on loan at Paris Saint-Germain. He started brilliantly with, I think it was 17 goals in his first 19 games. Inter Milan were like, oh, great, this means that Paris Saint-Germain will pick up the option that they have to make his deal permanent, which is really important to Inter, because obviously they spent a lot of money last summer on the likes of Lukaku and Barella and Sensi, and they were hoping to be able to sell Icardi to fund that. They couldn't sell him, but they agreed this deal where it's a fee, it's supposed to be, I think, between 70 and 80 million euros for the deal to become permanent to PSG. Now, given all the stuff that's going on at Paris Saint-Germain, the premature end of Ligue 1, the fact that, you know, he was less productive in the last couple months before the league ground to a halt, now they're slightly concerned that Paris Saint-Germain might not actually buy him outright, which means he'd be coming back to Milan, and so would Wanda. And that creates a problem, not just because he's on a very high wage, but obviously that would be a big hole in their finances, and that certainly makes them nervous.
Jules, what are you hearing?
Well, the situation has completely changed. Like Gab just said, back in February, the idea was very much for PSG to buy Icardi, to keep him. They were happy with him, and he was the perfect replacement for Edinson Cavani, who's out of contract in June. Now, with all the coronavirus crisis and everything, the loss of earnings for PSG with the season finished in France now, it's a very, very different story. They won't have the money to spend on Icardi and on the other players that they're targeting, especially in midfield and at the back. And it would be much cheaper to actually give an extension to Edinson Cavani, 1 year, even 2 years, and keep him like that, than go and spend all that money for Icardi to Inter Milan, and on top of it, spending money on his wages as well. So that's where Leonardo is at the moment. There's clearly things that have changed in the Icardi situation in Paris. And now I think that right now, Edinson Cavani looks more likely to stay and Icardi to go back to Milan than the other way around. That was 2 months ago.
Meanwhile, staying in Paris, the front page of L'Equipe saying that PSG confident that Mbappe is going to sign a contract extension, Jules.
Well, they're confident that he will stay for next season, stay this summer. So that's a good start for them, because obviously they've been quite worried with Real Madrid trying to make a move for Kylian Mbappe this summer. So I think that's out of the question now, and everybody knows it, and PSG are very much reassured. Yet his contract is still finishing in June 2022. So at some point they will need him to sign a new deal. Otherwise they will risk to losing him in the summer 2021. For quite a low amount, considering his current value. So they're confident to a certain extent, because he's happy in Paris. The teams The team clearly has improved in the Champions League because they qualify for the quarterfinals now, which is much better than the last three seasons. So there's a bit of a progression there, and they think they're hoping that it's enough to tie him to a new deal.
Finally, Jules, Mundo Deportivo reporting in Spain that Neymar is willing to take a 50% wage cut to go back to Barcelona.
Yeah, well, good luck with that. I mean, yeah, maybe he's earning 32 million euros per year right now in Paris, which is a lot of money, and certainly a wage that Barcelona cannot afford now. If he cuts that in two, let's say 16 million euros, maybe a little bit more. This is still a lot of money for a club that has a huge wage bill and will also, on top of that, have to pay the transfer fee to PSG to get Neymar, which will be above 150 million euros without a problem. So I still don't think Barcelona can afford him, and I think people at the club have already stated that.
Gab, any hope, do you think, of Barca getting Neymar back?
I mean, unless they come up with some sort of a package where they send players the other way, I don't see how they can, and I don't believe he's going to take a 50% wage cut. The only way that I think they could meet the demands in terms of transfer fees if they send players the other way. But when I say send players the other way, you know, I don't mean Antoine Griezmann pushing 30. I mean, you know, guys that Paris Saint-Germain actually wants and needs. So, no, I don't see this happening. I think right now they're just different factions within Barcelona are throwing different things out. One day it's Neymar, one day it's Lautaro Martinez, and they're just kind of seeing what sticks, if anything.
Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much for all the latest news, by the way, on the transfers that are doing the rounds. Go over to the website and click on Transfer Talk.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name? Check. Birthday? Social security? Is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag. Done.
GEICO. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
With thousands of locally owned NAPA stores across the nation, chances are that wherever you call home, we do too. So as America starts opening back up for business, and as more of us start getting back out there again, we'll be in big cities, small towns, and everywhere in between, doing what we've always done to help keep our local communities moving forward. So whether you stop by a NAPA Auto Parts store, Auto Care Center, or visit us at NAPA Online, you can count on NAPA know-how.
Now, before we go today, I've got to show you what happened earlier on in the show when we were recording with Stevie. You agree, Stevie?
100%.
The cat
Listen,
doesn't.
If you think, you know, did he him? Sorry?
Go on, Stevie.
Stevie.
What?
Is it on your lap?
That was perfect.
Hold on.
That timing was perfect.
Where's the bloody cat?
Can you come and get the cat, please?
Oh, mate, the timing was perfect.
The cat was just so loud, wasn't it? As if it was wearing a mic. Well, that brings us to the end of today's show. For more from Stevie, his cat, and Don, stay tuned for Extra Time. Welcome into the latest edition, then, of Extra Time. Pretty in pink. Stevie Nicol with us, as is Don Hutchinson. Boys, let's start with Real Madrid. Were they too late to buy Eden Hazard? He's already 29, had a season full of injury, and might only have 2 to 3 years left at his best. Don, what do you think?
I think only in hindsight. No one knew that he was going to pick up this injury and struggle. Listen, he tried to stay on at Chelsea for as long as possible. He's done a wonderful job at Chelsea in the Premier League. He has been a superstar, so maybe you could argue that he could have went there a season earlier. But as I said before, you know, I think he'll still come good. And he'll have more than 2 or 3 years. I'm pretty sure at 29, players are now going into their peak in and around 31, 32. So there's a good 3 or 4 years in Hazard just yet.
Stephen?
Yeah, I think it's easy to turn around and ask that question now because of the horrendous season he had last year, mainly because of injury and lack of fitness. But, I mean, When they bought him, he was arguably the most sought-after midfielder that was available on the planet. You know, when we were thinking about Belgium winning the World Cup, we were thinking the only way they win it is if this guy turns it on. So I think it's dead easy in hindsight to say, to ask that question after such a bad year last year, but there's no question, the guy's talented, and I'll be shocked if he doesn't come back and shows us exactly what he's made of.
Meanwhile, Dom, this may have happened to you considering your long list of clubs. If you scored against your former club, would you celebrate? Did you celebrate?
I would. I think I would. I think I'd give it to the fans, I think. Depending on who. I think I just would. I just think it's in my nature. I just think before the game, I'd go, try and play it cool, Don. Play it cool. Then once you score, I never knew what I was doing. I wasn't a good planner. I wasn't a good celebrator of goals. I just used to let loose and go mad. So I'm pretty sure I probably would.
Stevie, would you have scored against? Would you have celebrated against Liverpool?
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, at the end of the day, you've got to look after your own fans. I mean, if I'm a fan of Sheffield Wednesday, for example, and my player scores against Liverpool and doesn't even celebrate, I'm going to ask questions. So, yeah, I think a little bit of me was the same as Don. You know, you're not quite sure what you're going to do. All these planned celebrations, in my opinion, do my head in. So, I would absolutely have celebrated in some sort of fashion, no question.
Who scored more goals between you two? Don, how many goals did you get?
Oh, no idea. I wouldn't know. I've no idea.
Oh, because we did the quiz. Your quiz at 47, was it, Stevie? 46? I'm trying to remember.
46.
46.
47, that.
Yeah, 46.
Yeah.
He might, would you he reckon might just nick it.
Under, Don?
The goal gets a nickel, might nick it.
Don, in the light of the comments by Rooney yesterday, of course writing his column about Ravel Morrison, is there any player you played with that never reached the potential that their talent suggested? Can include a player that you coached, Stevie, but let's start with you, Don.
I'm just trying to think. There was and Stevie might be able to help me out on the guy's name. Liverpool signed a young boy from Oldham,
Wayne
and he
Harrison.
Came in and he was meant to be unreal, and it was my first couple of years at Liverpool and I'd heard all the hype about him.
Was it Wayne Harrison? Was it Wayne Harrison, Don?
Yeah, Wayne Harrison was his name, and he was meant to be incredible. He was meant to be the new Kenny. He was meant to be sensational, and he tore his cruciate in his first or second season at Liverpool. It was just as I arrived and I've seen him go through his rehab, and he never got back to anywhere near the standards that he was at, obviously, before, and could have then went on. So there's been plenty through the years, but I think I'd have to lean towards Wayne Harrison being the one that was really, really unlucky, snapping his cruciate, you know, in the early 90s when the physiotherapy weren't as good as what it is now, and unfortunately he never got back.
Stevie?
You know, I can't think of anybody, to be honest with you.
Right then, let's move on then.
I never took that
with the sports science.
I never took that much notice.
Sorry, I'm not going to force you, Stevie.
No, not really.
with the sports science available.
No, just
Stephen.
Lost me, mate. I can't hear you.
Okay, I'll go to Don first. With the sports science available today, would the guys think they would be much better player than they were previously? Don, what do you think?
Not really, no. I mean, my problems came off the pitch. I enjoyed my time off the pitch far too much. So that was known at the time. It was a given. I didn't indulge when I shouldn't. I just done it too much. I've done it on a Saturday night. I've done it in midweek. But it wouldn't have made me a better player. I played till I was 37. So when I was finishing I was finishing because of knee injuries. I had 5 knee operations inside 5 years. The clubs didn't know that I was going to have my operations. I paid for them myself. As soon as the season finished, I used to fly out to Colorado and see Dr. Stedman. He'd go in my knee, give me a little clean out, right back for pre-season. And I carried that on for 5 years. And I think 37 is not a bad inning. So I wouldn't have thought they would have got too much more out of me.
Stevie, the question about sports science, and if they had the sports science that they do now back in your day, would it have improved you as a player?
No, it wouldn't have made any difference to anybody as a player. You know, the sports science now is it's to do with the fitness. It's not to do with the ability of any player. It's about keeping them in a certain shape, keeping them absolutely at their peak as often as they can, or for as long as they can. So it wouldn't make any difference to your ability or your ability to get better on the field of play. It would just, I mean, obviously it would make you fitter and stronger, but, you know, you don't forget, you know, back when I was playing, there was no such thing, but everybody was kind of in the same, had the same sort of fitness. Every team trained pretty much the same, so, you know, Don was the same, you know. It was just starting when Don came along, but then every team came and started all that stuff at the same time. So you were just on a level par with all the other teams and all the other players. So it would have absolutely nothing to do with making you a better football player.
Are you happy that you got to play then, Stevie, where it was fine to have the diet that you had and obviously the drinks that you had and the crisps that you had?
You know, it's a very difficult question to answer that, you know, because that was normal for us. And we got to go out and enjoy ourselves, you know. But the guys today, you know, they're used to a certain lifestyle. And I'm sure they think that's normal. So maybe they're quite happy with it. I just wouldn't have fancied it. There's absolutely no way the guys today had as much fun and as good a time as we did. Absolutely nowhere near. But then, you know, you can't do what we used to do today. So I actually feel bad for them. You know, there's lots of things that they'll miss out on. You know, when you go around today and you have all these gentlemen's dinners, there are so many ex-professionals who are standing up telling stories, all the different things that happened. I mean, what are these guys going to talk about? You know,
yeah.
Well, the fastest
their memoirs won't be as interesting as yours.
Between
Stevie.
The house was a bit. Sorry,
their book will not be as interesting as yours is.
Oh, okay. Well, there won't be many pages in their book. Put it that way.
Yeah, it's going to be sparse. Ask Stevie just for once. If it wasn't for Heysel, how do you think your Liverpool side of 87-90 would have fared against the great Milan team?
We would have given anybody a game. Telling you, absolutely anybody a game. I actually played golf with Marco van Basten a few years ago. And I said that very thing to him. I said, you know what? Hello. I said, you know, I'm not going to turn around and say that we would have beat your team, because they're a fantastic team. I said, I'll tell you what though. It would have been one hell of a game, because we had a proper team, just like them. So, unfortunately, it's a guessing game. But, no question, we would have given them a game big time.
Don, the neutral robbed of not being able to see those battles.
Yeah, I mean, they were the standout sides, weren't they? Liverpool in the 80s were sensational. Alongside, you know, that Milan side were just terrific. There were some sides in Europe that had legendary status. Liverpool certainly had that in Stevie's day. Milan had it for a while. I think Juve and Inter both had it. And it's such a shame that those two sides weren't pitted together, but you'll never know. And that's probably the beauty of it. You know, it's nice to try and think who would have come out on top, but you never know. And that sometimes is the best way, just because it just leaves that gap in your mind where you could actually see it going either way. It would have just been an absolute goal fest, I'm pretty sure. And it would have been a wonderful game.
Who's the most famous person you've played golf with, Don?
Same. Well, I mean, I haven't got a clientele like Van Basten that Stevie had. I couldn't drop as many names there. But my local golf club, we have Teddy Sheringham. We have Ray Houghton. We have Steve Lomas and John Moncur. So it's not bad, but it's not Van Basten.
Who was the best midfielder in their prime, Don? SCN, Petit or Ballack?
Oh, I've got a soft spot for Petit. I liked Manu. SCN was just sensational and, you know, is a midfield player. He had an engine on him like no other. Ballack, I always imagined in my imagination that Ballack was a 10, he wasn't an 8. So Manu had something about him, and I played against him many a time, and he could kick you, he could outplay you, he was graceful, he was elegant on the ball, travelled with the ball very easy, nothing was a stretch for him. And I might be in the massive minority, but I would go for Manu.
Stevie, are you allowed to call him Manu?
Well, amongst
as well?
Those two, Don. I absolutely am going with Petit. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to add in into what Don said there, but yeah, for me, Petit. Probably Balik. The only difference between Petit and Balik would be a better finisher, but after that, every other department, I'm going with Petit.
Final question, will Stevie ever grow a moustache like Don?
Oh, has Don got a moustache? I can't even see him.
Oh, yeah.
Have a word?
Oh. It would take too long for me to grow a moustache. And you wouldn't be able to see it either. It'd be a wee flimsy daft thing. So, no. It's not happening.
You played with some great moustaches. Legends of the moustache game, Stevie.
Yeah. Oh, what a moustache Souness has, eh? Absolute belter.
Souness, Rushy, Aldo, John Aldridge had the classic.
Oh, Aldo, you could, sorry, you couldn't call Rushy's a moustache. That was like a...
True.
What do you call one of the furry insects that can crawl across the top of your lip?
A centipede. Caterpillar.
Yeah, that'll do.
That is it then, boys. Thank you very much as always. Thank you, Stevie and Don. We'll be back tomorrow for more. Thanks for your tweets. Until then... Goodbye.